Plastic, plastic, plastic. It is everywhere. It is woven into the fabric of the human experience in every country in the world. Plastic delivers water to your tap. It takes that same water away after it exits your sink. Plastic is wrapped around the wires in your home, and it has reduced the likelihood of fires dramatically. You can't live without the stuff. In most cases, plastic is the better environmental choice. The life cycle assessment of plastic over glass for bottles, for example, tips in favor of plastic by a long shot. That is, until that flimsy plastic bottle that is filled with a beverage gets tossed aside with no regard to where it will end up. And the same is true of plastic over paper straws. Not to be high and mighty about this, but plastic bottles in most advanced countries do not end up in the ocean or rivers, streams, and lakes. That's most of them. Some do, of course. They end up in landfills, which is better than a body of water, but even in a landfill, plastic poses challenges. The big problem is plastic that isn't headed to a managed garbage dump at all. Rather, it simply gets tossed aside. David Katz identified this problem 7 years ago, and that motivated him to start the Plastic Bank. He just reported Plastic Bank has now diverted more than 1 billion, that's billion with a B, plastic bottles from entering the world's oceans. That's 20 million kilograms of plastic. Katz says we worked with more than 17,000 individual collectors in Haiti, the Philippines, Indonesia, Brazil, and Egypt to collect plastic from vulnerable coastal communities. We invited David Katz of Plastic Bank to join us for a conversation that matters about working to ensure plastic can be recycled, can be part of the circular economy, and can contribute or continue to play a positive role in people's lives. David, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me very much.
You know, I think that you have identified one of the biggest challenges that we have, and that is how do we take post-consumer plastic, collect it up, and then be able to get it to enter back into that circular economy. What are some of the steps that you've taken? And I know that you've been doing this for 7 years, and so it's been complicated, but I know that you're getting better and better and better at it. So what's essential in being able to do that?
Well, there's a few things in the conversation. We've identified a cause to marine debris, which is poverty. And when we look at the United Nations Global Sustainable Development Goals, and we look at them from 1 to 17, they're in fact placed in order. Now, to get to number 14, which is life below water, we have to solve one first, which is poverty. The reason that so much marine debris is occurring is poverty. It's areas of extreme poverty that are the greatest contributors to that material. If we want to stop the flow of plastic entering the ocean, that's what we have to do. Now, for us, I've approached it in a way that plastic is money for the world. The Plastic Bank, colloquially expressed as the world's largest chain of stores for the poor, where everything in the store is available to be purchased using plastic that was otherwise considered waste. And now with the stores, we offer school tuition, medical insurance, Wi-Fi, cooking fuel, clean water, everything the world's poor struggle to afford and need, now available using garbage that would otherwise flow into the ocean. You see, we've monetized waste. We have to end poverty to be a solution. That's the Plastic Bank. That's what we've addressed.
Okay. How do you do that, though? On the surface, it sounds like, yeah, of course, let's go do that. But you're dealing in countries and a lot of people who don't even have a bank account. How do you engage them so they can say, there's money in that plastic, and then you create the system that allows them to cash in on that. That must have been incredibly complex.
It's been complex. It's been a life's journey. The gift of it is I get to become the person that gets to make this change in the world. Now, we're more like bank branches, in fact. We're a location-based service let me take you through a bit of an example. Let's say you were walking over a field of diamonds, like shining diamonds everywhere. And you're like, diamonds everywhere. You want to bend over and you think, there's no bank that I could take the diamonds to. There's no one that would accept these diamonds. There's no store that takes them. No one even barters diamonds. They probably sit on the ground worthless like rocks that they are. And in fact, the only reason that diamonds have any value is because there's an agreed upon exchange mechanism for it. Diamonds are just rocks. They're not even scarce, but there's a value that's been attributed to it. Collectible, desirable. That's what we do. Bank branches for the poor, location-based infrastructure that reveals the inherent value in that petroleum product. Deposit plastic by mass and withdraw the things you need the most. Now, in all of that, we've created a blockchain-based banking application for the poor to give transparency, authenticity, traceability to the supply chain so that our customers like S.C. Johnson, like in a bottle of Hinkle, when they want to know exactly who collected what material from where and where did that money go and what did that look like, they have that. But more importantly, it gives banking, inclusion, community inclusion, a sense of worth to our collector communities. And the more frequently that they return the material, the higher the quality of the material, the quality of their social circle that also brings consistent volumes of material in, the collector earns a credit rating. They have the ability then to have immediacy to loan and other financial products like insurance packages and other things that take away some of those inherent fears inside of parents so that they have some level of hope or expectation of the future. And we know that time perspective and poverty are synergistic. Short time perspective lives within those in poverty. How might I extend that so that people can look into the future? Because when they can now think of other people.
So how do you go about recruiting these people? You know, in the intro, I said that you have worked with 17,000 individual different collectors who, in essence, I guess, are entrepreneurs. They saw an opportunity, they seized upon it. I'll collect that plastic and I'll deliver it to you. But how do you wind up creating that network for them that they can bring the plastic to you and be able to capitalize on it?
As we expand around the world, the Plastic Bank works with and endeavors to work with those organizations already engaging the poor, already having a relationship to come in with already a sense of trust, and then giving extra value and building them into a system where even more money is distributed into the hands of the collector communities. We remove all the middlemen and give the money to the collectors. I use the example in your introduction as well. It struck me. Plastic is remarkable. It's remarkable. It's got nothing to do with the plastic. Let me ask you or anyone who may be watching, if every bottle or every piece of packaging that you encountered was $5, how many would you see in the environment? How many would be floating in the shore? Zero, none. Right. So it has nothing to do with the plastic, everybody. It's us. Stop vilifying the other. Look internally to see what value have I lost in self and in thing. What we do is tip the scale. That's where now plastic is tuition, so empowering. Like, whoa. And for our collector communities, not only does it pay for the tuition, but for them, it's the end of poverty. If their children can't go to school, poverty will prevail in the family for the next generation as well. And then all of the slums I've been to, with all of the poor that I've spoken to, all of the beautiful, soulful people that I've met, and I ask them all, what is it? What aspiration do you have? What is it that you want? They all have only ever answered, for my children to go to school. Because they know that's where poverty ends. That's why school tuition is so important. Chains of schools around the world that accept plastic to pay for tuition, more girls going to school, more people being able to have access, more of the community growing and evolving. So we engage schools. So schools become collection location. We have a program for faith or for congregation. It's something that had me meet the Pope, because we created, and we have a beautiful endorsement from the Vatican as a business. It's powerful. I created a program for every congregation, no matter the faith, to encourage the parishioner to not just bring tithing or offering on their day of worship, but to bring the recycling with them as well. Because every small village, no matter where you are in the world, has a school and a place of worship. So we need to be beautifully, powerfully, globally exponential fast because the ocean can't wait. And that's really the method that we go.
So let's say we're in some coastal community in Indonesia and you've got a cohort of people who are going to church and going to school and they're bringing in this plastic. What do you do with that plastic then? Because it's not all the same. Do you have to sort it or do you bundle it and then get it to some sort of facility where they can now start to be able to use it? Because, I want to kind of follow this line of thinking because I know that you worked out agreements with some of the major consumer brands that use a lot of plastic. And they're saying, okay, David, we're on side. We want that plastic. But how does that flow work so that you can get that post-consumer plastic actually back into use and then it really does become part of the circular economy?
I'll take you on a journey with one of my favorite collectors, Lise. She lives in Haiti. She's one of our first and the one, first woman that I got to watch poverty leave. Now, she survived the earthquake in Haiti in 2010 as a widow with two little girls. And she's powerfully become one of our great performing collectors. She's now has seven children. And she takes her children to school. And then once she drops the kids off at school, she goes out and collects the material. She spends her day. She's got a bit of a route. She goes from stores and door to door and other things. She collects volumes of material. Then she comes back to the plastic bank location with a material where it's viewed for quality and then it's weighed. And once it's weighed, so by mass is the form here. So by mass and by type of material, a value is then deposited into an online bank account for her. So she's got that. It's immediately transferable into cash if she needs to, or she can buy things in the location if she needs as well. So that is there then at the store, at the location. So that becomes a place to amalgamate all the material from all of the other collectors in that community as well. And then once they receive a volume of material, and then based on the blockchain application, we know how much volume is there. We know when it needs to be shipped to the processor. It then gets shipped by a bulk to the processor, where their processor on the ground either bales the material or they flake it, they shred it and wash it and get it ready, both of them, as an export. Now, in other countries, we want to use the material locally whenever we can, but Haiti doesn't have that opportunity. So we ship that material into the United States or into Europe, really, for it to be remanufactured and put more into circularity. So it's a very simple process. Mm-hmm. It's location-based. Right? If it's in your neighborhood, you'll do it. If you've got to walk 10 kilometers with, $3 or $4 worth of plastic, probably not going to happen. But when it's in your location, when it's in your community, like what we do in Bali and in Denpasar, our locations are close to the grocery markets for the local population. The grocery market, so based on time, as people get to know we're there, they keep all their plastic, then they bring it to us. They get a few extra pennies or dollars before they go to the grocery store. So it's very simple. Say, hold on, that's money for me. That might be a bigger piece of fish. That's diet diversification. That might be something sweet for my child. It's all kinds of extra things.
So you've just worked out a new arrangement, I understand, with, is it SC Johnson? For them to take more and more of your plastic. Why is it important that you have that relationship with a consumer brand like that?
Well, it's all part of that circular economy that we talk about, yet so many people have, few examples of it. Now, SC Johnson buys volumes of that material. So they're, one of their iconic brands, Windex, for instance. So, the power here is that you as a consumer can go to a shelf, look for any bottle of Windex. Anyone's listening, if you go to a store, you're going to buy a window cleaner and buy Windex. Because when you buy that Windex, when you grab that bottle off the shelf, you are working hand in hand with the world's poor to keep it from entering the ocean, hand in hand. And by doing so, you add value into their lives. You give them hope and inspiration and are probably putting more children in school by doing it. The importance of working with organizations like SC Johnson is they connect to the consumer, because I haven't yet met anyone that doesn't want to do something about what's occurring in the ocean, but they didn't know how, but now they do. Now you can. As a consumer, you have power, you have the ability to make change because they listen to you. And remember that every time you buy something, you're voting for it. And they listen to you. And every time you vote for it, they make it again and again and again. And if you vote for things that degrade humanity, degrade society, degrade the environment, that's what you're going to get. Be careful, because you're powerful.
And maybe you can help me understand this, because I understand that with post-consumer plastic, it's been a challenge up till now, and you seem to have overcome that. Because when I first heard about the work that you were doing, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, you get all that plastic, but how can we make it usable once you've collected it so that it can return back into the system? What were some of the key elements that that allowed you to work with plastic recycling manufacturers, I guess, that they said, yes, okay, we can take this product? Because I think it's important. Yes, we're keeping it out of the ocean, but it's equally important that I think that it's going back into the economy and being reused.
Must be. There's 10 trillion kilos of plastic on the earth. All the plastic we've ever produced is still here. 10 trillion kilos at roughly $1 a kilo. It's $10 trillion worth of value. The world this year will use about 400 billion, something like that. It's growing, who knows, with the masks and things. But why are we making more plastic when we can continue to recycle what's already here? It's a bit ludicrous, and especially in the face of the degradation that we're now witnessing. Now, was it hard? I guess it was. I'm going to give you a quick esoteric answer, because I'd like to enliven any listener. Let me assure you that anything that we're doing is not against the laws of physics. As hard as it sounds like, it's not against the laws of physics, so it can be done. It's only creative thinking that gets it there. It's only someone that's problem solving that makes it so. We have to continue to seek that and look for how we can contribute. Now, the material is almost infinitely recyclable. It's a fallacy that it's not. Now, certainly there's challenges in some communities in the economic equation, because when you've got to send out a $200,000 garbage truck or more with a couple of unionized guys and then have a facility with tens of millions of dollars and you're trying to make an economic equation from returning material from the household, I guess that gets a little bit more difficult, sure. But that's not what's occurring. We're kind of gig economy. We're the Uber of recycling. We've created a fourth industrial revolution technology through the blockchain that creates an opportunity for anyone in the world to be a recycling entrepreneur. Simple.
Well, and to go back to your earlier point about when you put value on it, it is going to be collected up, because your credit card, right, your plastic money doesn't wind up in the drain or rolling down the river. So by putting money on it, that economic equation changes.
Right. Reveal it as money, because the poor don't throw money away.
Yeah.
They certainly don't throw away the end of the poverty.
Okay, right? So... I imagine you must be brimming with stories of people who have benefited and they've seen their children go to school. What's one that really, lifts your spirits and makes you say, I'm really glad I did this?
Oh my goodness, I have so many beautiful stories. I talk about Jean and Haiti. It's so impoverished. It's remarkable to be there. The people are so dignified, so beautiful. The model that we have there as well are also cooperatives, where we take these individual collectors who are living in the streets and we bring them together as community, because one of the confines of poverty is being alone. And when you have no hope and you're alone, that's crushing poverty. So we bring people and bring them together, and then they all work together and they all share revenue. Jean was the president of the organization that we created. We set bylaws and things, and we have to manage them still. There's lots of work to do, but Jean, with these two little girls, they're like school age, like just young little girls. And first time I'm talking to him, because it's like our first real cooperative. Like, Jean, how's it going? What's it going? What's occurring for you now that in the cooperative? He goes, David, he kind of takes a pause. He says, I can see my girls going to university. Wow. He had time perspective. He could see past the hunger of today. He actually saw himself as being someone.
Isn't the sort of the essential element in the moving away from that sense of poverty is one of hope? And through this, you're giving people hope?
Self-mastery. They don't have to wait for a handout. You can't donate the end of poverty. You can't donate the end of poverty.
Right.
It's opportunity. You have to take people from their back to their feet, not from their back to their knees. Their hands out, that sells zero. And nor is it what they want. They only want opportunity. They're resourceful. They're the most resourceful people in the world. If they're not, they die. You take the most resourceful people in the world and you give them an unlimited income opportunity where they can go and figure out how to collect more and more volumes of material, they do it.
Right. So... in our last minute and a half right here or so, what are your aspirations here for the next year or two for Plastic Bank, and what do you need to do to realize those?
I need every single person listening to go into their local store and ask the manager of the store to point out all the recycled content, to show everything that has a regenerative product, to show them everything that helps heal the world. Go and be a voice in the store to say, that's what we're looking for. I want things that have ocean-bound material in them. Because the retailer is the customer of the big organizations, the big fast, the Procter & Gamble's and Unilever's. The retailer is who they listen to. And that retailer is listening to you. You want to make a change in the world and help us? What I need is for all of you to go and continue to create the demand for it. Now, for us, we need to continue to expand. We're going to Cameroon now in partnership with SC Johnson. We're going to be doing Tanzania and Kenya. We're going to continue our expansion in Southeast Asia into Thailand. And certainly we need to continue now beginning the seeding of Colombia so that we can continue to take South America, Africa, South America, Asia. There's a lot of work to be done. And I need everyone to gather together with us to gather the material together.
What resources do you need right at the moment to be able to continue to move? Because what you're telling me right now, it sounds fairly aggressive. Are there resources that somebody could say, hey, I think I can help you out with this? What is it that you need?
Oh, we need quality talent all the time. We need resourceful, incredibly smart people. I don't need people who are just passionate. It's table stakes. You need to be passionate and smart. So we're looking for people all the time. We have a big list of people who we need to hire, lots of open positions all the time. Now, thankfully, beautifully, we're a for-profit business and we're profitable. And so we get to continue feeding this engine inside of it to grow more and more. We need more sales. We're a sales organization like any business needs to be. Find more customers. So that's why I ask everybody here to create the demand. So that's what we're doing. And time and fortitude and all of it.
Yeah. Let's direct them to your website. What's the website so that they can get in touch with you and say, I want to be a part of what you're doing?
Plasticbank.com. Powerful. Go to www.plasticbank.com. Sign up there. Be a part of our newsletter at minimum so you can be aware of what's happening. So there might be calls for staff or things or everything else. And it shows the support. And for our staff internally, our staff now, whenever someone enrolls and becomes a part of it, it's so enlifting, enlivening, and powerful. It's powerful as well. That just that can change the world too. Everyone's powerful, don't forget it. And nothing that you want to solve in the world is against the laws of physics. It's only creative thinking that makes it so.
Right. I'm reminded of what Margaret Mead said about a small committed group of people can change the world. And you clearly are doing that. Thank you so much for taking the time. And congratulations. Exceptional work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.